Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Canada Confessional. I'm Jason Cherkis. Sam is off on permanent assignment. Remember this guy?
I like seeing the lakes. I love the lakes. Just something very special here. The Great Lakes, but also all the little inland lakes that dot the parts of Michigan. I love cars.
Mitt Romney. The former Massachusetts governor was never the most impressive political talent.
I'm not familiar precisely with exactly what I said, but I stand by what I said, whatever it was.
In fact, the two-time presidential candidate's political career is mostly the story of one loss after another, starting with his ill-fated attempt to grab Ted Kennedy's Senate seat back in 1994. Actually, Mitt Romney's election to the Massachusetts governorship in 2002 is really the only election he ever actually managed to win, which means that today's guest is the only person ever to lose to him at the polls.
The Democratic candidate for governor, she is the current treasurer, Shannon O'Brien, and a resident of Whitman. You may applaud.
Shannon O'Brien had a great resume. She was a state senator, and she was the Massachusetts state treasurer in 2002 when she decided to throw her hat into the ring and run for governor. She won the Democratic primary after a tough fight and would face Romney in the general election. Back then, Mitt was mainly known as a failed Senate candidate, a son of a failed presidential candidate, and as a mega millionaire private equity investor. Not the most inspiring or sympathetic of profiles, especially in a state as left-leaning as Massachusetts. Shannon felt she had a real chance of beating him. She went after Mitt just as Barack Obama would do 10 years later over his time at Bain Capital. Mitt hit back, attacking O'Brien's husband for his work as a lobbyist for Enron. Things got nasty. Romney ran an ad depicting O'Brien as a sleepy basset hound. Sam and I talked to Shannon over the phone from her home in Massachusetts, and she took us back to that fateful election 15 years ago. She told us all about the political challenges of that race and about the difficulty of running in a state that still, after all these years, has never elected a woman governor. Welcome to Candidate Confessional. Shannon O'Brien had at least one thing in common with Mitt Romney. They both came from political families.
It was sort of genetic. My great grandfather was the first Democrat elected to the Massachusetts House of Representatives back in the 1930s, and my dad worked in the Foster Furtwängler administration in the 1950s and early 60s when I was born, and he ran for county commissioner. Was county commissioner, and that was my first campaign. I was in fourth grade, and corralled all my girlfriends and boyfriends to work on my dad's campaign and put bumper stickers on cars. And it was, sort of being born into and steeped in a belief that government can make a difference in people's lives. My fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Meisner, she actually predicted I'd be the first lady governor of Massachusetts.
Oh, man. And you never once recoiled from it? You hear these stories of young kids who are like pushed to do athletics early on and they just can't handle it at a certain age. That never happened to you?
When I was in high school, and I wanted to go out and hang out with my friends, I certainly didn't want to, go out and do political things with my parents. That was the last thing I wanted to do. But again, there was not a lot of choice, and, I was a kid who, followed orders, so that was okay. But I always was very proud of my family's tradition and legacy, even though it was a pain in the neck to have to give up a nice fall Sunday afternoon to go do stuff with your mom and dad rather than hang out with your friends.
What advice did your father give you when you began running, or what did you learn from him, you think, from watching him?
Probably the best advice he ever gave to me, and I'm speaking to two journalists, is you never have to answer the question that you're asked.
That's terrible advice. Terrible.
You guys think it's terrible advice. But the point is, you know, people are trying to get you to say certain things, and, you know, it's important that you get your message across, and it's important that you stick to your guns, and there's always a way that you can, you know, while addressing the question, just make sure that you are addressing the issues that are, you know, central to what it is, that the message that you're trying to get across to voters. So you guys might not like that, but that was probably...
I hate
we
that.
We don't. We're against that. So we're voting. We would vote against your dad.
I did enough times to get him mad. So,
so you were...
Which was a problem for me. I should have listened to him. But anyway.
So wait, you were like... So you were 43 when you ran for governor, right? 43?
Yes.
That's how old I am, and I can't imagine running for dog catcher. So I'm wondering, like, I guess because of your history and because of all the stuff that you went through as a child, it was easy for you to do this, but were you at all worried about your youth and sort of were you trepidatious about sort of making that leap? I know it's maybe a little different from running for treasurer, but maybe it's the same.
It's much different than running for treasurer. I mean, I can remember you run for office, okay, and you kind of think you're a big deal. You know, you've had television ads and, you know, you see yourself on TV and, oh, my God, and you're really not. Running for treasurer, you know, running for statewide office, not once but twice, I think that I understood how famous I was, but more importantly, how famous I wasn't, how well-known. Famous is probably a bad word. And when I first came into the treasurer's office, there was a significant scandal. You know, we had uncovered the theft of $9 million from the state treasury, and so we were, you know, top of the news package every single night. It was big news, big scandal. You know, we were working hard to clean it up. But when I ran for governor, and I thought that was intense publicity, when I ran for governor, it is, you know, a factor of 10. It's just so much more focus and, you know, you can't even move without making a mistake.
There's sort of a tough dichotomy that you're bringing up. On the one hand, when you're running for governor, there's all this extra scrutiny where your every move is sort of analyzed. And at the same time, you probably could go into the supermarket and half the people don't even know who you are. There's like this weird disconnect.
I have one sort of interesting story, and I remember it was in October of 2002, and I'd won the primary, and I was on television. And I went into the mall. I had to go pick up something for my daughter, and they'd given me a Sunday afternoon off, which was pretty rare, you know, for a good year and a half. Hadn't had any Sundays off. And I remembered people were recognizing me and thinking, wow, this is going to really suck. You know, and it was a realization that, you know, if I win this race, my life is really going to be very different in terms of the sort of mundane things that you're used to.
But you're also a woman running for governor. And I'm wondering, in those early discussions with your strategist, did you discuss how to navigate that, how to talk about that, and how to combat sort of maybe the sexism that was surely going to come?
We will. And it's actually, there was sexism, and it's sort of interesting. And I'm trying to remember which senator it was, and you guys will probably remember, but she'd been a congresswoman. She had twins, and she said she was not going to run for office again until her infant twins were old enough to know the difference between right and wrong. And then a Senate seat opened up, and she ran. And they actually showed me one of the ads that she had, which was her speaking into the camera from her kitchen counter, and behind her, her husband was holding the two young toddlers. Now, I had given birth when I was 40 in, you know, my first year as state treasurer in 1999. I got elected in 98. And I had a young child at home, too. And I will tell you that you would be stunned. I actually still have some of them in my basement, in my, you know, sort of, you know, library of old records. But some of the nasty letters that I would get from people who were just attacking me for holding this big job as treasurer and then not staying at home, you know, with my young daughter, you know, my baby, Reagan.
Give us a sampling. Give us a sampling of what they would
say. Oh, I mean, the sampling is, you know, how dare you, you know, go and do this and leave that small child at home. You should be ashamed of yourself, you know. I have the letter. I still have it downstairs, something like that. And what ended up happening is my husband husband, quit his job. He took care of our daughter and allowed me to run for governor, which was a tremendous sacrifice for him. But, you know, that was how we balanced it. But we certainly had to be cognizant of that. One of my other favorite anecdotes is Halloween was coming up. And I can remember the staff in a panic a couple of days before because, you know, oftentimes, you know, the newspapers will, you know, knock on John Kerry's door, you know, and what are he and Teresa Hines handing out for candy? Do they hand out good stuff or do they hand out bad stuff?
I think ketchup packets.
Yeah, just ketchup packets, probably.
Yeah, no, they apparently they give out really big candy.
He seems like a guy who hands out a toothbrush, to be honest.
But they have historically done this with politicians here, yeah. You know, in Massachusetts, and who hands out the best candy, you know. So not only were we worried about what were Shannon and her husband Emmett going to be handing out for candy, but we had a toddler.
Yeah.
So, you know, then we had to get me screeching back from two fundraisers that were taking place, one I think in Springfield and one in Worcester, and then I had to come back so I could do the ceremonial walk around our neighborhood and go trick-or-treating with my toddler in her, you know, the first of, you know, multiple princess costumes that she would wear for the next 5 years. So that was one of those things, because we didn't want to be it to be perceived as the fact that I was not being a good mother and taking her on Halloween.
Now, I mean, that's sort of like an inherent double standard that you have to deal with as a woman candidate. And you talked a bit about what I would say is overt sexism that you faced as the treasurer. Early on in the campaign, did you face similar acts of sexism or, you know, double standards whereby you just felt like there's no way a male candidate would have to deal with this?
Well, you know, I mean... It's how you look. You know what I mean? There's always sexism about how a woman looks. And women have to, how much more criticism have you seen of Hillary Clinton's outfits than you have of, you know, I mean, obviously people are making fun of Donald Trump's hair. You know, that's, you know, certainly, something they've been talking about in terms of his appearance. But I think women have to sort of balance a little bit more how they come across. Women have to work a lot harder at demonstrating their credentials for voters.
Did you have to go out and buy a bunch of suits or something?
The thing that's hard is, for men, okay, formal is you're wearing a suit. Informal is you take off the suit and take off the tie. Really informal is you take off the tie and roll up the sleeves.
Yes.
Kind of, you know what I mean? It's sort of like that's, you know, for women, it's, do I wear, you know, short sleeves, no sleeves? I mean, remember what, you know, Michelle Obama went through when she started showing her, you know, chiseled arms. You really do have to think a little bit more about how you present yourself and looking gubernatorial, or, you know, when I ran for treasurer, looking like, you know, someone who could manage billions of dollars in funds. And so that was, it's a small piece, but it's certainly one that you had to be thinking about.
Doesn't sound that small to us. We talked to Michelle Bachmann for our last season, and she mentioned that on certain days when she was campaigning for president, she would have to make 4 outfit changes because she couldn't wear the same thing to an outdoor venue that she wore to a fundraiser, and she couldn't do that the same thing that she wore to a speech. So she, you know, she said sometimes her days were, you know, 4 hours were spent just on, you know, clothes and making sure she looked fine.
Well, I obviously didn't work at it as hard as
After the break, Mitt and Shannon face off on the debate stage.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
In our first couple of debates, Mitt Romney did not know what to do with me.
And I guess maybe you don't understand who is responsible for issuing the for issuing that debt.
So,
and
you
I absolutely
that you, my question
what
is,
I did,
did you promise
could,
that
would
you
would you let me answer?
Of course.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sorry.
I know you're so excited, but anyway, we've got to, you know.
And I think that they, and very smartly so, determined that, you know, I was being aggressive, but maybe too aggressive.
We filed legislation. We changed the laws so that we could actually save the taxpayers more money. I'm sorry you don't understand that.
Let's not go there. I've spent my life in finance as well, and I have a pretty good
demand. And that as a woman, you can't cross that line. And that is, again, one of the balancing problems that women have. They want you to be tough enough that they know you're not going to get walked over when you're in office. But you can't be too tough because then you're mean or you're, you know, yeah. What rhymes with rich. That is a very, very difficult thing. And I made a huge mistake in my debate prep, in my final debate, me one-on-one with Mitt Romney. You know, I followed my campaign instructions. You know, we had very smart people, you know, nationally known people coming in and talking about it. And it was, this is where you hit him, this is where you hit him, this is where you hit him. When the fact is, what I should have been doing is cooling things down and not attacking him, because that didn't play into my strength. It allowed them to turn that narrative around on me that I was too tough, that I was mean. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you look back and I go, if I had stick to my original sort of, how do you speak? How do you present yourself? How do you be a little bit more cool and commanding rather than going after, you know, my opponent? I think that it would have been a little bit more helpful.
Okay, I don't want to get diverted because I want to get to Mitt in a second, but you prompted a thought in my head. Is part of the problem with politicians that they're too overscripted? Maybe you were just, the problem wasn't that you were yourself.
That is what does happen. And what happens after you win a primary is everybody's on board and everybody's got an opinion. And it becomes a lot harder. And I do think that this is also one of the problems that Hillary has sometimes in being overscripted, and what, you know, they attack her for using the teleprompter. But someone who has been on the receiving end of incoming for 20 some odd years, you become, you know, that right arm starts to come up and protect you a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? And so I do think that coming across as more genuine is really important. And, you know, the advice that my father gave me, you know, a long time ago keeps you in good stead. However, you know, you have to be very good at answering the question and not, you know, if you constantly deflect, people can kind of look at you. And I think that, you know, sometimes in my final debate, I probably was deflecting exactly as I was trained to do, but it came across as not answering the question.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask, what was your first impression of Mitt Romney?
Well, my first impression was when he ran against Ted Kennedy.
I believe that abortion should be safe and legal in this country, and I sustain and support that law and the right of a woman to make that choice.
I have supported the Roe v. Wade. I am pro-choice. My opponent is multiple choice.
I remember one television reporter breathlessly coming up to me, you know, saying, asking me the question, what is it like to run against, you know, an icon? I'm an icon. So, okay, you know, I wasn't breathless. I thought he was beatable. And, you know, and as we went through the course of the campaign, I did think he was beatable.
He had already gotten icon status. I didn't realize
that. Yeah, I don't
that
understand
quick.
That at
no,
all.
The Bain stuff in the Olympics, right?
Yeah, but then, like, he did get his ass kicked. I mean, Kennedy beat him.
Yeah.
And then I wonder
his
why.
Dad was
oh, I guess the Olympics was the issue.
Olympics, yeah. What did right. you think of him as a campaigner? I mean, he was doing, you mentioned these commercials that he would cut where, just for the reader's own knowledge, he would take on these sort of, like, everyday man jobs.
Here's my dream for Massachusetts. I want this to be a place of opportunity with the best schools and the best jobs.
And show that he was, you know, flinging sausages at Fenway and picking up the trash and stuff like that.
They totally
seemed a
believable.
They seemed a little out of place, I would yeah. say. Did that give you a sense that he was a bad campaigner?
No, I mean, the ad that really kind of, you know, put him a little off kilter was the ad that they had him in a bathing suit in the lake at Lake Winnipesaukee, you know, looking handsome and fit, way fitter than I'd ever been in my life. Yeah, I wouldn't get on TV, you know, in a bathing suit, that's for sure. But that ad just annoyed people, and it looked like a Leave It to Beaver, you know, kind of perfect family.
Where he's throwing his kids in the water and having fun, yeah.
Yeah, and that actually backfired. I don't really think that the everyman... And this is also sort of getting back to who you really are, and it's also, you know, I think that what hurt him in the presidential race the last time is authenticity is important. And people, you know, people can look at, you know, Donald Trump, and they like authentic. He can be all sorts of other terrible things, but being authentic and being real, it's like they like that. I mean, I just saw this cartoon yesterday. Someone sent it to me. And it's this picture of a cat, and he's got a suit on, and the poster says, "I will eat you." And there are all these little mice going, "At least he speaks his mind. I like him." and so I don't think he was seen as authentic.
Well, and then the media sort of turned it around, and they went after your husband, and he went after your husband. And I'm wondering, did that surprise you? And, I mean, do you remember the day when your husband sort of got that newspaper in the morning?
That was particularly difficult. You know, my husband and I, you know, we were legislators together. You know, I fell in love with him, you know, when we were working, you know, on a number of different issues side by side. He was the author of a, you know, big important piece of legislation that helped clean up the Boston Harbor and, you know, did a lot of work, you know, both on health care and you know, construction issues in Massachusetts and transportation issues, brought the trains back to Southeastern Mass. Good guy. And one of the things I loved about him was his integrity. And he had been for, you know, a number of years after he left the legislature, he did some lobbying on energy issues, on transportation issues, on water and sewer issues, a lot of the things that he had been, you know, expert in when he was a legislator. And one of the clients that he had was Enron. Now, when I literally can remember waking up one morning and saying, "Wow, that's great. You got Enron as a client. Can't you get five more of those?"
Your judgment was off there. The ad against your husband is often credited as being sort of one of the more critical points in the race. Would you say that that's an accurate depiction?
It's critical, and again, there's so much information, but when I was treasurer, and this sort of, you know, backing it up, I got into office in January of 1999, and within 3 weeks, Valentine's Day, thereabouts, we found out that there had been a theft of $9 million out of the state treasury, okay? So we not only, you know, worked to uncover this and who stole the money, and, you know, we went after this, we found, you know, corruption that had also been taking place at the state lottery. I mean, you know, we also found out that under my predecessor, they weren't paying taxes the right way. I mean, there were all of these just huge problems that were going on at a poorly managed state treasury. Did a great job. The problem is, day in and day out, and I managed being in the A package every day, there's this general sense that there was corruption in the treasury. So now, 4 years later, they literally ran ads against me.
Was this when you were portrayed as a dog?
Yeah,
as
the Basset Hound.
Within the campaign in real time, when that ad aired, was there a decision to make a response ad, or how are we going to combat this?
You know, obviously, criticizing it. I don't remember the specific response ad. You know, I'm sure that we, you know, did mention the connection. I mean, this was one of the places where I disagreed with some of my political consultants, and I remember, you know, later on speaking to, you know, a couple of other people that, you know, they thought that we should have made stronger arguments against Romney, basically having the Joe Malone team, the corrupt administration that I had cleaned up after, and this was the team, you know, a good chunk of the team that was running the Romney campaign, but, you know, a lot of people didn't think that that would stick. I thought it was pretty meaningful, but, not everybody, you know, you kind of make these decisions together with your team, and that wasn't considered something that they thought we could do successfully. Gotcha.
The other big turning point, at least as it's portrayed, was the debate with Romney, where Tim Russert was the moderator. And I guess I'm just confused at how this became such a controversy, but the word unbecoming, as used to describe you, kind of blew up. Can you tell us about how this all went down?
And welcome to the final gubernatorial debate.
So Russell, I thought, was being pretty tough with me during the debate.
You have to find $2 billion in reductions over the next several years.
And had started, posing questions. We talked a lot about abortion, and that was a defining, issue. And I, was hitting Romney pretty hard on the fact that he had been endorsed by Mass Citizens for Life.
Why did you accept the endorsement?
You know, there are a lot of people
Mass
that endorsed
Mass Citizens
me.
For Life.
I don't know about the endorsement of the Mass Citizens for Life. I didn't seek it.
And I said, you accept. The endorsement of the Mass Citizens for Life, yet you're saying that you're pro-choice. And then he's looking at me saying, I didn't say that. I didn't accept it.
When you say I accept it, in what way did I accept it, Shannon?
And I said, well, your spokesperson did, Eric Fernstrom. He accepted the endorsement.
Your spokesperson stated that you accepted their endorsement.
I don't know what you're talking about. So I was kind of hitting him on that. And, and then he turned to me and he said, you're being most unbecoming.
And your effort to continue to try and create fear and deception here is unbecoming. It's an issue that's important.
Now, that's not one of those things that really strikes a chord with me. But at that point in time, because, we were pushing the issue that he was being a phony on choice, that a lot of women's groups really reacted to that. And again, it's one of those things that there's so many people involved in a campaign at the end. I personally didn't think that it was something that we should be stressing or pushing because I thought it deflected from the real issues that we should be talking at the end, but you can't control every tentacle of your own campaign that is moving forward. And there were a few women's groups that, made a big statement that he was being sexist. A lot of that gender politics, it doesn't always help the woman. You know what I mean? It doesn't always, I think, play in a woman's favor. And I not only was unbecoming, but I was 110% right, because the moment he got elected governor, he flipped his position on abortion. He changed his position on gay rights.
When did you get the sense that you were actually going to lose the race? Was it after that debate?
Election night.
Because you were up pretty significantly in the beginning of October, I think maybe by 12 points, and then started to slide. I'm wondering, was it before? So it was election night then?
It was, I had been down, as many as 12 or 14 points. Right after the primary, I was up by 12 points. And then, by the end of October, it had tightened up. I was up a point a day. He was up a point the next day. It was very, very tight. The day the primary ends, I'm out of money. I have to start, I literally went dark on television for a week, 2 weeks. And so, and unlike Mitt Romney, I live in a little cul-de-sac in a little, middle-class town. I'm not a wealthy person. I can't, write a check for $5 million and then spend my time in a sound booth, practicing my gestures and my speaking voice. I had to go out and do 3, 4, sometimes 5 fundraisers a day. And so that is one of probably the biggest problem. You can go back and forth about, abortion or did she yelled too much, or did she do this, or was she unbecoming, or that. But the real issue was I got outspent close to 3-1 in the final weeks of the campaign. I didn't have enough money to do targeted mailings to maybe special interest groups to appeal to them on, maybe single, issues that might have, excited them to go to the polls. That was the biggest thing.
Bigger than gender? I mean, Massachusetts had never elected and still hasn't elected a female governor. I mean, that was a huge historical burden, right?
It's a mixed blessing. And again, I look at the Barbara Lee Family Foundation research. It can help you in certain places, but more likely than not, a woman has to work harder to credential herself. When you look at who's been governors before, who's been president before, there haven't been, any women presidents, not as many women governors. So you're sort of pushing up against the preconceived notion that people have of what a leader looks like, what a governor looks like. You have to work harder to put yourself in people's minds. And even harder in Massachusetts for a Democratic woman, our party has been so successful. They dominate the House and the Senate, that people want balance. Ultimately, Massachusetts is not a Democrat or Republican state. It's an independent state. And they repeatedly elect Democrats to the House and the Senate overwhelmingly, but they like a little balance. They like a moderate Republican in there to just put their thumb on the scale and keep the Democrats from running rampant. And that is, you know, and that has been, you know, proven true in a number of different elections. And that, I think, to me, was the toughest, you know, hit on me is, you know, having the House, the Senate, and the governor's office in Democratic hands, not a smart thing for voters. And that, I think, was the most damaging line of attack that Romney, you know, waged against me.
That was Shannon O'Brien, 2002 Massachusetts gubernatorial candidate. Canada Confessional is produced and edited by Zach Young, who also wrote our theme music. If you're enjoying this season of the show, please continue to spread the word. Next week, another story from 2002. We're joined by two U.S. senators, one current, one former, to talk about their fight against the Iraq War authorization. See you then.
You sing that song? I love that song. You know that song? Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesty above the fruited plain.